@comicspeak.com, and I will let our panelists introduce themselves and name their outlet and, you know, send their barbaric dog over the panel.
Hey, I'm Jill Cantor, the editor-in-chief of TheMaryC.com.
I'm Joshua Yale from IGN Comics.
Hello, I'm Matthew Malikoff, editor-in-chief of Multiversity Comics.
Hi, I'm Rich Johnston, founder and head writer of Make It Cool.
I'm Thomas Bergen, I'm a news site called The Comics Reporter, and I'm a former comics journal editor.
All right, so we have a lot of people here who all start the day thinking about what the news cycle is going to be. So let's talk, I'll just throw it out. I mean, the title of this panel is one that I put out because, it changes on the internet on a moment-by-moment basis. Now, Rich and Tom and I have done, this is the third time we've done the panel together, but Jill and Josh and Matt, it's their main voyage. But you all have kind of like Josh, you only recently joined IGN, right?
Yeah, they hired me full-time like 6 months ago.
Okay.
And biggest mistake of their lives.
Yeah. And Jill, you just got to be editor-in-chief, like 6 days ago or something?
Yeah.
6 weeks ago, yeah.
Congratulations.
Matt, I know Multiversity has been around a few years, but it kind of really came to prominence just recently.
Yeah, I mean, I guess somehow we made some waves and got some kind of attention through the various things that we do. But it's nice. I like getting the attention.
Yeah, so I mean, let's say I'll throw it out to the panel, and the reason why I have the title is that the world of BuzzFeed is really out there with all these crazy titles and videos about people crying and all that sort of stuff. And so, how was the year in comics journalism for those of you who have been doing it for more than a year? Tom, Rich,
just growing, I guess. More and more readers, all with different voices. Some of them who want to see their voices expressed more in the journalism that they're reading. So it's like, I guess, trying to be more diverse, finding a lot more voices and a lot more opinions to try and express.
Well, the question was, how was the year in doing what we do?
Yeah.
I guess it's been kind of a rough, crappy year for me. I produce the site by myself. I have a publishing partner who does some of the back-end stuff. And I have one columnist that does European comics, so I don't understand a lot about them. But I guess the downside of that is when you have a rough year personally that ends up being a rough year professionally, and it hadn't been the greatest year. So, yeah, I'd take this one back if I could at the store, But then, it happens. So, this is depressing.
Publishers are doing, and a lot more interest in the smaller press, just from getting emails or talking to people, finding out what they want us to cover. At the same time, Marvel and DC are obviously getting a lot more competitive for attention with a lot of really good headlines that spill out beyond our comic news sites. So for us, it's very much about trying to really promote and go after the smaller things, Image, Dark Horse, Dynamite Boom, even, I've been talking with sites like, or publishers like Humanoids, Fantagraphics. So that's our end, but I know that's a very small niche that not everybody is necessarily interested in everything these publishers have to offer, which is unfortunate, but it's still interesting for us to speak with these publishers and to engage them a bit more.
Now, Josh, your site is mega huge. IGN, you know. So tell us about, you know, taking you know, starting there and you know, changes in changes for Josh.
Like she said, it's a big site for video games, and then there's this like comic entertainment site section, and then a small section of that is the comics section. So a big part of my job is tricking people into reading what I post. Because, you know, the big interest is on Marvel and DC, and, you know, we'll be saying that. We've had said that for a while, and we'll be saying it for a long time. But it's almost, I'm just trying, like, opening doors for people. If you like this comic, you might like this other comic. And then just trying to pick, you know, the news that matters to people and that matters to you, because, you know, you want to inform people, but you don't want to, like, pull any punches. So it's constantly just trying to find, like, what's right for your audience and, you know, deciding, you know, who your audience is. So that's, like, been the big challenge, at IGN.
Do you feel, though, I mean, obviously, you know, you are, you know, starting there. So, I think, like you say, IGN really had more of a focus on the, you know, the big two sort of stuff. I mean, have you seen, like, more interest in the things, the sort of stuff that Matt was talking about? I mean, does it get traffic for you, or...?
Yeah, it all depends, again, on, like, how we can, like, angle it to get more traffic and stuff. Saga, I'm happy to report, is just about as popular. Saga is just about as popular as Batman on the site. So I feel like that's, like, a big win that people who had never, like, heard of it, and they see, like, the imagery, and they click on it, and they read about it. And just, like, so, you know, and you know, some other sites that I read a lot have lots of, like, editorials and opinion pieces and stuff, and we actually don't get it to do as much of that. So, like, a big part of my job is sort of, like, just finding, like, entertaining ways to get people into comics, and I don't get to you know, go as in-depth as I'd like sometimes. But with a column, I get to do that, and then when people see that, it's just, like, 100%, like, hate mail, like, right at my face.
Oh, yeah, hate mail. So, Jill?
Yeah, last year, obviously, has been maybe the best for people who are in our particular realm. I mean, I'm just thinking back to last year's Comic-Con and just with the comic book movies themselves and how much bigger they're getting and how many more we're seeing, how many more comic book TV shows we're seeing, you know, more and more people are getting interested. So what we're doing has more eyes on it because, you know, it's out there more. So I think in that sense, at least, the year has been really, really exciting. And as far as the comics themselves, I mean, like they're saying, Marvel and DC, of course, are always constantly, you know, fighting for market shares, but there are so many comic books out there now, from the smaller publishers to people who are self-publishing and doing Kickstarters. I mean, I can't tell you how many emails I get a day from people saying, you know, would you like to review my comic? And I look at it, and it's actually, you know, a real good, you know, they did it themselves, and it's a complete thing, something you would see on the shelves. So that's exciting to see.
Yeah. You know, I think we probably all get those emails, and the fact that you open them is very... So, you know, just to answer my own question, I mean, nothing really too different at the Stately Beat Manor. I mean, you know, people, I do have, like, people who also write for the site, and, you know, it's kind of a shifting, rotating cast at some point. But I mean, I did feel that for me personally, I mean, I have some of the same issues as Tom. You know, when you do this a long time every day, it does become like, you know, you do have those 1,000-yard stares where you're like, what am I doing again? But then, you know, coming here, it's like, why did I ever think that? This is so great, you know, and so many fantastic things are happening. So, you know, I'm very moody, I guess is what I'm saying. But I, you know, I did find that, you know, the competition is greater and greater and greater for the leisure time of the web, you know? Like, I mean, if I see a post titled, you know, Brad Pitt's best, you know, naked shots, I'll probably click on it, you know? I mean, I some of these gossipy things, or, you know, the 12 child stars didn't know were astrophysicists. I mean, I'm not complaining on that. So, you know, that's like to relax at times. So I guess I was, you know, trying to figure out how to kind of, you know, maintain that casual audience in this attention economy. You know, I mean, I have my devoted readers, but, you know, I also rely on casual readers sometimes as well. So, yeah, I was kind of just like thinking, you know, I mean, you have to stick with what, you know, brought you to the dance at some point. But, I mean, have any of you thought about that? I mean, do you have more trouble engaging the casual readers, or, I mean, is that important to you?
Usually I do it with a lot of content, because the odds are that something out there will pique someone's interest, and you never quite know what it is that's going to go ballistic on the site. This week I did not know that running a piece on Sabrina the Teenage Witch being the new Bride of Cthulhu would be the biggest thing we publish all the year. And the last few days it's just like 2 million hits or whatever, and you're going to think, yeah, that's not what I was expecting. But that will always happen, and the things you often think will go big often don't. So it's basically a case of just finding lots of interesting things, putting them up there, and the more you do, the more chances you are of reaching that audience.
But I mean, was that, you know, and I'm not, you know, Rich and I spar from time to time, so this will sound like I'm picking on him, but I mean it in a real way. I mean, if that was a real story, you know, I mean...
It is a real story.
But I mean, when you're saying, like, you know, like kind of spitballing, just throwing stuff out there and seeing if it works, as opposed to, you know, something like the column that, you know, is very heartfelt or something.
Well, that's part of it. That's another thing that you put out there. You find voices that you represent on the site. It's all part of the same thing. I'm not saying just put up a whole load of nonsense. It's putting up a whole load of content that might address different people's needs, and some of those will go and find that casual audience. I think it's William Goldman says, nobody knows anything. And that's what I think it comes down to. It. No one knows what's going to be popular. No one knows what people are going to read. You've got an idea. You can make an educated guess. But, I don't think anyone really knows.
I have a different view on that. I don't give a shit. I don't understand splitting your audience. I don't know what my audience is. I haven't looked at traffic numbers since 2005. I mean, it's not... It seems like a real desperate kind of... a dangerous thing, I think, in terms of audience and hits when you're, you know, trusted with writing news. That sounds so old-fashioned, but it just seems like, I don't know, it just seems like I'm glad that we have enough hits, I guess, to stay around and that people want to advertise for whatever reason, but serving the audience's needs with whatever the hell it was that came out of your mouth just now, like, picture of Naked Lady. I get to use the counter absurdity. It seems like Cthulhu's submarine, whatever that was, is closer to absurdity than running stuff out of language.
I disagree. I think why it was a proper story. It was showing how quite ostensibly a children's publisher, one that's had decades doing that kind of story, is now tapping into H.P. Lovecraft to start telling new kind of stories. I think it was a very interesting story for all sorts of people. It demonstrates an awful lot about the industry and where it's changing and about publishers. I think to dismiss things in that fashion is wrong.
But it's also like there was no way beforehand that you could tell that it was going to be big, like you were saying.
No, it just was interesting.
It could have bombed as much as any other news piece. So I think it's actually probably important to have a balance where you have the things that you care about and you know you care about, but then, you know, if it just so happens that they put up a new picture of Superman's cape, you might as well put that up and hope that that audience will stick around for the other pieces at the same time.
I'm not as keen on that, no, because, I mean, well, first of all, I probably do care about Superman's cape, but that's just me. I think if you write about what you're passionate about, but write an awful lot, not, if you're passionate about an awful lot, that's how I find an audience, I guess.
And it's also interesting because you do it a lot alone. I mean, there are a ton of other people on Bleeding Cool, but you do so much by yourself, whereas I think, you know, for some of the other sites here, we have other people that can do some of the stuff that they might be more passionate about. Like, if I'm not passionate about something, I can say, oh, well, I know so-and-so is, and they can do that while I do X, Y, or Z. Which is an easy, obviously not everybody has that luxury at every site. Some of it is super small, some of it is super big, but that helps when you have, you know, you can sort of spread a little bit wider net behind the scenes.
I mean, there's actually one thing,
Thompson, I want to pick up on. You were talking about news presenting itself to you. Mm-hmm. You want to switch the cover. Is that how you see it? News presents itself to you, or do you find
it? Well, you can find news too, for sure. But I'm just saying, as far as something, I don't know, there's a news cycle, there are news stories that are generated, and I'm one person, I don't have an investigative team. I'd love to be able to pay for sourced comprehensive journalism, but I haven't been successful enough to do that, and I haven't found a way to do that yet. So yeah, I do my fair share of generated stories, but for the most part, I think, I do. I think a lot of news presents itself to you in terms of things happening. When someone dies, you write an obit. When someone's fired, you write a story about them being fired. Comes out with a new comic book that is publishing noteworthy in some way, you react in that way. But there's a really fine line between doing that, and you kind of have to define what's that and what is, you know, locked into the publicity cycle and where you're just being a marketing aid to people. Is there a story you can think of that didn't get 2 million hits that is of that type that you would feel just as strongly about?
Absolutely. Just this morning, I was writing a piece on a really interesting.
Well, you wouldn't know this morning yet how many hits
it had. Yes, you would. You can have a look and see how it's doing.
And it's done poorly.
Yeah, it's done poorly, but a really good piece to write about a new comic book that boom, but there. So it's like a small press piece. Well, that's the guy's putting it into SNES cartridges. I thought it was a really interesting way of presenting comic books. And no, very few people read it. But but I'll always be looking for stories I think that are interesting. Sometimes they explode, sometimes they won't, but it's only by finding interesting things that are interesting to you, and lots of them, I think, that you can actually find those moments.
Let's kind of talk the rest of our panel here, though. I mean, you know, how has, do you just write about what interests you? I mean, you have the passionate contributors. How do you, you know, Jill, you have a whole writing staff. How do you, in your newly found powers, you know, how do you apportion that out?
It's funny, when I took on the editor-in-chief role, I thought that I would be writing less, and so far I have not done that. I'm still writing a fair few pieces a day, but it's just, you know, with how the schedule's going that day, and our staff, are all huge nerds, and so they're passionate about all their different things, and when, you know, we see different news stories pop up, we try to give them to the people that, you know, are most interested in, because then that helps when the readers get to the story, you know, they see that the person knows what they're talking about. Not only that, but then knows that they're a huge fan as well, and it helps them to relate to the story a little better. But, you know, there are occasions where nobody else is available, and you have to give it to somebody who doesn't, you know as much. And occasionally we get people who are not too happy that we did that, but, you know, we have to say, like, this is our job, and sometimes, you know, we can't always write about the things that we love. We try to, and we really love to do that, but sometimes you just have to say, okay, here's a new story, give everybody the facts, and, you know, let the commenters go on and get their opinions.
I mean, like, the Superman's cape, in other words, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we all know when Superman's cape comes out, you know, either we'll do it, or we'll be writing about what everybody's talking about.
What's this story about Superman's cape you're not telling us, because I'm intrigued?
Okay. It's imaginary. Believe. You know, that's my headline. You know, there is no Superman's cape story. It's Josh, what about you?
That.
So how about you? What about, you know, what makes you think the story?
If something, I personally don't find it interesting, I probably wouldn't put it up. You know, that's not to say, even, you know, like, for example, I'm not a fan of Doctor Who.
Out.
But if, you know, if it's like general, like, Doctor Who news, it probably won't, you know, get past me and go up on the site. But if I have something I find interesting about it, despite not being a fan, then I feel like that would go up. But it's also just trying to decide, you know, like you earlier we were talking about, of just like having casual readers, of just creating like a welcoming, like casual environment with a variety of topics. And then, you know, when the big news happens, you can talk about that, and then you can do like a fun feature. And then, like, every now and then, you know, you have to, it's like having a child. You play with them sometimes, and you just have them around, you know, and just spend quality time. But then sometimes you need to sit them down and have like a serious talk, and that's when you address like serious topics. Like, you know, pick whichever one you want. There's a bunch. I don't have to get into them now.
I want to tell you about the cape now.
Or, you know, just like, you know, women's in comics, or gays in comics, or like racism in comics, or anything like that. You know, that's, but we, you know, if that's all on your site every single day, then it's not as, you know. You know, we're in comics because we want to have fun and like entertainment, and also to like send messages that are like personal to us as well. So just trying to like share things like that reach me personally. That's what I want to put on the site.
And there's also stuff that I personally find is strange that no one else who reads the site gives a crap about, you know. And sometimes I'll put it up just because I want to share with the world and hope that other people get interested. And sometimes it's just crickets, you know.
So, yeah. I've found that. I mean, I get a whole post about, you know, doing the site for 10 years, which just, you know, as of this month was my 10th year. And because when I started it back in those, you know, caveman days, there was so little to read on the web that, you know, I could write any old thing, and it would get so much attention, and, you know, it spoiled me. I mean, I remember I wrote this whole thing about, you know, buying a mop, and I got, like, this whole thing, and, you know, now I could do it as a product review, you know, like, these mops are the best, but, you know, those days are gone. But, you know, Matt, let me ask you, now, how long has Multiversity been around?
Since 2009, started as a blog spot because I really wanted to talk about X-Men Origins Wolverine.
And you know, and this year, Eisner nominated, you know, so...
Eisner losing.
Yeah, but, you know, listen, it's an honor.
And the DC Stevie Go title as well.
Yeah, I cannot believe that.
So, I mean, what made you want to develop it into this site, you know, into a full-fledged kind of, you know, like, site that covers all sorts of topics?
Honestly, it was 100% accident. You know, like I said, it was a blog spot, and I sort of set myself up some recurring columns, things like that. Things that I knew that I wanted to write, and that I just wanted to get it out there. Whether anybody read it, it didn't really matter.
Right.
Over time, you get emails like, you know, I like your site. Would you be interested in me doing something for it as well? And it sort of evolved as a collective in that sort. So once we got to the point where we had like 10 people, it was very easy to say, like, you know, in the beginning there was no way we were covering news, because there's no way, you know, some new announcement comes along, by the time I really had the attention to devote any time to it, it's dead and gone, and I'd rather, you know, write about some other thing.
Yeah.
So once we got to that point where there were enough people, it was a lot easier to say, well, like, hey, now it's more, we can divide things up. It's like what Jill was saying. When you have someone on your site that's passionate about something, where, you know, for me, I don't want you to hit me, but I'm not very interested in 2000 AD.
That's allowed.
But I have these two...
You have to leave, but...
I have these two guys that wanted to write for the site, and they're like, we love 2000 AD. So, you know, here you go. Now we have a dedicated column that every week covers what's new in 2000 AD. All I do is I read it, check for grammar, spelling, give them tips on, like, you know, they were trying to get it so, you know, for someone like me who's not interested in 2000 AD, I give them tips on, like, well, here's how you can get me to read it,
right,
and maybe the readers would be interested. So it was...
Is it working?
You know, I did read a couple of new things I've never read before.
Did you like them?
Yeah, they weren't bad. I really liked Rob Williams and Disraeli's Ordinary.
Yeah.
That was in 2080. That was really good. And obviously that spun out and became its own miniseries as well. But that was really good, and I picked it up from them in that column. So it was just a very eclectic growth for us, where when somebody came in, one of the very first things I say to them is, like, what are you interested in? You know, if it's a news piece, would you want me to forward it to you, or do you want a recurring column, things like that. And then just kind of, one of the biggest things I do every week is organize the schedule so that I know when everything is coming out and I know who has what day for what topic.
Jesus. Almost sounds like a wheel jump.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, you mentioned the D of discoverability. You know, like discovery 2000 AD. But, and, you know, Jill, you mentioned all the emails. So how do we all deal with those emails? You know, like from a guy, and, you know, I must have, from the 2 weeks of, you know, Hell Week at Comic-Con, I must have like 200 emails at least that are like, read my Kickstarter. You know, how do you deal with that?
You know, it's tough because I've said before, like, I kind of wish I never heard the word Kickstarter before, because literally that is, you know, a fourth of my inbox now of people saying, I have a Kickstarter, I have a, you should promote it. And it's, half the time they don't even tell you what it's about, and if I spend the extra, you know, 10 seconds it takes to click on to Kickstarter or read about it myself there, I probably will just delete it, and it hurts me to do that because I know so many people, you know, have this creative stuff that they want to put out and get attention for. But it's just impossible with the amount of stuff that you get, you know, each day.
Well, I you know, just to clarify, I didn't ask the question in a way that was like, you know, how do you delete your email? I mean, I mean, what I meant is I know everyone on the panel. I know we all want to discover new things, you know? So, I mean, it's kind of this tension between time and curiosity, so...
Well, I've got a great tip. Anyone who sends in a Kickstarter request to me, I've got a little filter that goes through to access email management, I let them say, well, do you want to write about it? Write about your own Kickstarter. Do you want me to do a promotion? Well, I could do it. It would be a bit, you know, self-serving. Why don't you self-serve yourself? You write the piece. Every Friday, we line up on the site, and I get to send the kids out for the weekend.
Is that journalism?
No, but I'm not a journalist.
Get out of here.
But again, there's an audience of people like to hear people talking about their own work. And actually, with this kind of stuff, if I was interviewing them, I'd be getting in the way a lot of the time. So when it comes to Kickstarter, it's literally about promotion. Now, of course, there's going to be some Kickstarters which are going to be newsworthy. And these are the kind of things that I might take up differently. I may look at what they're doing and why they're doing it. I may criticise them. And that's something I'll do generally during the week. But the weekend, you'll get about 20 to 40 Kickstarter articles on Bleeding Cool. And That's what the audience expect. That's what they know, and they enjoy that as well. But you're doing it in that fashion, so we'll keep doing it because people keep reading it. But we will also keep analysing them and finding the news separately from that.
How about anyone else? I mean, how do you are you always out looking for new people? I mean, what's your trusted source for that comic? Is it just going through the Wednesday pile or the inbox?
For general comics or for email stuff?
Oh, no, I mean, just, you know, I mean, how do you find, you know, like how, you know, discover that book? Because, I mean, we all do. We all love finding someone new that we're like, oh, my God, I can't wait to tell everybody about this.
Probably
being on the internet.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I mean, that's the natural flow of stuff comes your way. You look at the Twitter feed. Go look at this, okay? You know, it's not. That's the entire internet is designed to great stuff to you, Heidi. The question is how the hell we did that 20 years ago. You know, you'd wait until you go to your mailbox, or you heard about it at the show, or you'd read, like, you were like the comic books they used to run, you know, like Heidi Hernandez would run, like, these are the five comic books I'm reading, and that was like, you were so excited. And then if you go back a generation beyond that, you were reading Bud Plant ads on the back of Epic Magazine trying to figure out what the hell Cerebus was. So, I mean, it's easy to do that now. It's like, that's all the internet is. It's look at me, look at me. So you go look at me, or you don't. I mean, really?
You know, I was talking about the other D, which was bringing up a little bit earlier, because the real big story of the year has been diversity. And, you know, some of us have been covering a lot, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, getting more diverse writing staff or representing, you know, these different kind of viewpoints. And, you know, how have various sites dealt with the diversity issue?
Well, we found voices. We've gone out to find people rather than wait for them to come to us. That, I think, is the big story, is that somebody, talk about publishers and diversity. They usually wait for people to come to them. I took a lesson from the London police, who was at the time, 20 years ago, was suffering from basically being all white and not black. And they decided to actually start advertising in black media for new police, rather than waiting for people to approach them. And so it's that kind of thing. It's going out to different communities, finding people who've got good voices, and talking to them. I think, but I mean, Bleeding Cool, I think, has more percentage-wise black writers than any other, non-mission-specific basic comic site. The amount of women writers are increasing again as well, now majority. So it's going out there and finding people. When I'm at the show, I'll be listening to people talking, and I'll be listening to interesting voices, and often it's people who won't come into contact in any other way. They're just sitting next to them in a panel when they're talking to their friends about comics, I'm thinking, that's something that should be picked up and more people hear about.
So who are some of the writers that you think are really, you know, we should pay attention to?
Ian Magito, he's a senior cosplay correspondent. He writes about cosplay in a way that I haven't seen anyone write before. He happens to be black, he was great. But we went out to find him in certain communities where he was writing. And he just stood out as being the finest writer I was reading about that kind of topic. He's absolutely superb. On the site at the moment, a chap called Peter Svensson has been covering. He's covered the gay beat at comic books conventions in the past before us. But he's basically upping his game of late, and he's been doing more and more work for the site. Joe Glass, another gay writer who started writing for a Bleeding Cool in bits and drabs. His work is absolutely astounding. He's been writing more and more, been encouraging that. But because it will be a different audience, it will serve a different audience, they will write about things that I don't. And that's... Although I think they will write about things that make me want to write about there, that stuff. They intrigue and excite me. But it's going out there and finding people rather than waiting for people to come to you. That's the big one.
How about everybody else? Anybody else here? Besides
you? We talk about diversity a lot on the Nerdy Too. It's something we're very passionate about and always trying to cover and bring attention to things, you know, where we think people aren't paying attention. But at the same time, also touching on things that are getting a lot of attention, like the new, you know, woman who's going to be Thor, obviously, is, you know, a huge deal for us. And a lot of people see that sort of move as like, well, it's just a marketing stunt. We just want to sell comics. It's like, well, no shit, you know? Like, that is what they do for a living, you know? Maybe the reason that we're not getting the stories that we want to see is because there's only one type of person telling the stories. And that by having a different perspective in the room, even if it's, you know, it's not the main artist or writer, if it's the editor, someone who could put in their personal perspective and say, you know, like, look, it's not the same way for everyone, you know. There's so many different people out there in the world and we're not representing that in our comments. And so it's something that I'm really happy to see in something like the new Flash television show that's coming up, and the show, and I spoke with the creators today, and they said it was absolutely something that they purposely did, you know, and it sounds weird that you have to do that, you have to purposely think, you know, well, we need more than white heterosexual people in our show, but they did, and it's going to be a good thing, you know?
I think it's necessary for shows like that when they're having shows based on characters who were created in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s as the lead, so they're all going to be white men. You have to do something, otherwise it's just going to look hideous.
But, I mean, like, you know, with Mary Sue, I mean, it was kind of revolutionary when it was launched in that, you know, I mean, it was targeted. I mean, I've had so many panels at this convention that were talking about this whole idea. Like, you know, 4 years ago, there was a panel here called They're Geek Girls, and I mean, it created this whole thing. I mean, the idea that just 4 years ago people were asking this question is kind of
mind-blowing. Yeah, I mean, when I started my own personal blog, thenerdybird.com, back in 2008, and I didn't see a lot of other female voices out there. Heidi was the only female voice that I saw. And it was amazing to me. I didn't think of it in the sense of like, oh, this is great marketing for myself because I'm the only chick out there. Like, it was just, well, this is cool. I can talk with other girls and get them interested in things they, you know, may have been tertiary really interested in, and now they can say, oh, well, this girl's interested in it. Maybe I can be too. And I ended up part of a few other, you know, geek girl websites, but they were labors of love, you know, that we just did on our free time after our day jobs. And so when I found Mary Sue, and I found out that, you know, there was an actual company behind it, you know. It was people that were getting paid to do the same thing that I was doing on my free time. It was amazing, you know. So I was totally down for joining them, and I did so as an intern a few years back and worked my way up.
There you go. You know, Matt, on World Diversity, you've been doing a lot of really great pieces that are kind of more industry-focused, I guess, or creator-focused, you know? Maybe, like, you know, you do the series of artists and writers and everything. You know, I mean, what you know, prompted that, or what's been the response to that?
It's varied, the response, but what prompted it was just that, for me personally, I like engaging writers, I like engaging artists, I like talking to people. So for a while, I just did a ton of interviews with whoever would get on the phone with me. And I found that to be personally rewarding. We started looking at more long-form ideas, because we had one about a year ago that was relatively successful on creator-owned comics and how they were changing. And we said, this works. Like, this is what we want to do. In terms of what we've been doing lately, it's basically, you know, me and David Harper and Brian Salvatore, we sort of brainstorm ideas, and then we send out these Q&As to people that we want to get their input on about, you know, what's it like being an artist? You know, what are the things that being an artist means that no one is going to really know about? Because I think that's sort of the stuff that needs to get talked about a bit more. Superman's cape is great, but there's so much other interesting stuff about comics that could get the spotlight on. You know, we have this one coming up sometime next week that David and I were working on about colorists. And, like, in the past year, everybody cares so much more about colorists and coloring comics. You know, Jordy Belair has come up from, you know, this extremely talented, hardworking colorist. Now everybody knows who she is just as much as they might know Brian Bendis or anyone else. She just won the Eisner last night, and that's great. So just personally, that sort of stuff, stuff on retailers, you know, Rich, you're really good about talking to retailers a lot, but there are these other aspects of the industry that I would love to focus on more, and I try and focus on more. It's just, to do so takes a lot more time and effort than a standard news piece that you can do in 5 minutes about Superman's cape and get that up.
Yeah.
Like, you have to really want to get in the trenches and talk to people for half an hour. You know, I did that one recently about Rocket Raccoon selling. And I think I spent the entire evening on phone with retailers in my local area, calling them up, asking them their thoughts, recording it, and then writing about that just to get their sort of thoughts. And I mean, it spitballed into something I had zero interest in the beginning. The article that came out was not what I started writing. But it is very interesting stuff to talk with retailers.
Yeah.
That was the this article of Bleeding Colours written is wrong. There's no way that cover could have sold that much.
Yeah, well, I
didn't make anything else.
I did not, you know, when I saw it, and I emailed you about it. But you know, sometimes you see this stuff, you don't necessarily believe it, and you want to figure out more about it. So you know, I emailed Rich about, you know, I think I directly emailed. So Rich, where did you hear this? And Rich is like, I'm not telling you. But you know, so I called around. I just got what people's thoughts were on it, and it turned into something else that I thought was equally interesting. Just engaging with retailers and talking to them about how, you know, they feel about variants and all this stuff.
You know, we have a few more minutes. We do have some time for questions. There's a mic, actually, just so we can all hear. So if anybody wants to ask a question, or you can just throw your hand up, you know, if anybody has one. But in the meantime, Tom, you know, what's you know, you and me have been at this 10 years. I mean, I know Rich has been at it also, not quite on a daily basis that you have. So, you know, what is, you know, what's your goal, what's your dream?
I'd like to do a good job, I guess, you know. I mean, it's not, I don't know, I don't really like the comic side. I just work in theory right now, all right? My work in theory is that a lot of people love comics, and all the talented people became comics creators, and very few of them became all the other people. And we don't really have a support system, whether it's magazines about comics or retail stores. We don't have as many of those great things as we do the creators. I think sometimes we let down creators and that make this great art. So I would like to do a better job. I'd like to do a much, much better job than I'm doing right now. That's about it.
Well, you do a great job, Tom.
Show up. Some days I hang out on Twitter and make jokes about my butt. You know?
I enjoy it. Have a good day.
We got to, you know, I just figure we got to do better. It's a great art form. And there are amazing people in this art form, but there's a exploitative soaked throughout the industry. Not people aren't well off. We're about to see a tidal wave of poor creators getting older and having all sorts of troubles, and you know, a lot of that is on the reporting mechanism, so we don't do a very good job, I don't think. So I'd like to do a better job. That's my dream. Right. Also, I have like low blood sugar, obviously, right now, so like maybe a sandwich, but also.
We have some trail mix if you want some.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, okay. Second mic.
I worked in all weekly, and it's and I do have to pay attention to numbers because I have some, you know, corporate overlords to answer to. And I've noticed that Facebook is really tricky when it comes to their analytics and sharing stuff and trying to get articles out there. So what social media platform or where do you find most of your traffic coming from? Whether it be Reddit, Twitter, or Pinterest.
For us, it's sort of even between Facebook and Twitter, but our social is very high. Like, our readers they love to share things, you know, which is great for us, obviously. But they're a shareable kind of crowd, and Facebook, I feel like has a little edge just because there's a little more information on Facebook. You know, obviously, they're very limited with what you can do. And there's that aspect of posting something on Facebook and people start commenting and it spreads so far that people who don't actually like the page are now commenting on it. And you can tell when it happens, especially on our page, because, you know, there's people saying, well, who cares if, you know, this woman's butt is facing towards the camera at the same time as her chest, you know? And like, oh, you must be new here. I'm sorry.
Well, IGN's so big that actually I have a whole, like, social team that, so I don't really
care.
No, I know. I sound like so bougie up here. But I really just have to fight to get them to put something on Facebook. Facebook's like prime real estate, and it's very dangerous to like put too much stuff on your social media, because the second someone gets annoyed, they turn it off, they unfollow you, they unlike you. Personally, I like Twitter the best, because it's more like fair. Facebook sort of prioritizes things and tries to like put things in front of you that other people like, and some people don't like it. It's sort of like you were saying, like, yeah, falls off the feed. Sometimes you post things and people who are following you don't even see it, and they want to monetize that and get money to get people to see your content. So Twitter is like more fair, and I find on Twitter people follow people because they want stuff from them. So if they're like following you on your site, and you keep making yourself and your tweets like a destination for news and interesting stuff from comics, and like then that's the way to go. But really, just to put yourself is, you know, spread yourself out as much as you can without like driving yourself insane is generally the best way to go.
For us, it's Twitter that saved the day, basically. I don't use Facebook, so I don't know if Facebook is any good for us. I don't think it is, personally. I think Facebook is good for us when Superman's cape happens. Other than that, I don't think anybody necessarily cares about a lot of what we might put on Facebook, which is fine. But Twitter, once Twitter really started coming up, and everybody started tagging everything, and you know, we can at creators or whatever. You know, the best thing that ever happened was, I'm horrible at Twitter, so the best thing that ever happened was me saying, okay, someone else is going to use this Twitter account, spend all their time adding the creators or whatever, and engaging them and sharing it. And that's essentially what made, not for nothing, I think that's what made people start noticing our site. You know, from there, now it's a mix. You know, now it's a mix of either people directly coming to us because they just know us, they trust us for whatever reason, and they like our content, or Twitter, and getting it on Twitter, and sharing it on Twitter, and, you know, then looking and saying, like, okay, what did people miss that we want people to see? If it's okay, I'd like to quickly plug something.
Sure.
But we're doing this thing right now at Multiversity. We've done a couple of these big month-long events, right? Right now, we're doing one called Guardians Month, and Guardians Month is very... you know, it's something that is very passionate for all of us, very personal. We reached out to Mike Mantlo, and we arranged it so that we can do, at the end of, once the Guardians of the Galaxy movie's in theaters, we're going to run an auction with Mike Mantlo of all this art that we've curated over the month, right? But the only reason that we were able to do that was thanks to Twitter, reaching out to artists that we really like on Twitter and saying, like, we have this thing you might be interested in, you know, what's your email, things like that. So now, you know, we have all these great pieces going up on the site. There's one that I just saw this morning by Rebecca Isaacs that's, like, amazing. And it's all because we've been able to use Twitter to engage.
Yeah, you know, we're running out of time. I want to get one other question from the other gentleman there. But, yeah, so if you go on the site, you can find out more about the Guardian.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds awesome.
Yes.
So other than the recent issues about the Superman's cape that have come up, what current event in comics do you think has been underreported, and what's your strategy to bring more attention to it?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say it's been underreported because it has been reported on quite a bit, but it's going to become more and more and more of a story is the con crush, you know, and the crappy cons that are starting to happen, and, you know, the rip-off cons, and, I mean, you know, we're starting to have more, you know, Dash Con and all that, but, you know, there's more shady people getting into it, I think, and you know, I think we're just going to, I think that story is, as cons have grown, I feel that story is really going to become more of that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't want cons become, like, a dirty word where people take advantage of it, yeah.
For me, this year it's the DC move. One of the biggest publishers in America is going to be irrevocably changed when it loses about 80% of its current staff and employees. The creators have no idea what's coming, and they're very scared. I think that's going to be a massive change to the undercurrent of what's actually happening in the mainstream comics. It's going to affect everyone.
And you know, I'll just throw this in there too. I mean, I do think the diversity issue. I mean, the fact that we're really at gender parity in the fan base, and the fact that creators are incredible. I mean, more women are making comics. It's like a real maker community. I mean, this is really going to change, like,
so many things demographically speaking, and you know, so it's barely scratched the surface of what this really means. So yeah. Anyone else? I know we're almost out of time here, so thank you so much. But you know, anyone else before we go? Anyone else on the site? You know, like the next. We have time for one more question. If anybody has anything, come on. Yes, you. No, you. Anything? Yes, go to the mic.
About rather, I don't know if you're particularly good at it, but how do you approach a story if you know that it might have negative effects on the site? For example,
basically.
Full speed ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, can you expand a little more?
How do you approach a story? It's tough. I mean, it's tough. It's tough right now because there's a we have an economy of social favor right now in comics. That's a significant thing. Being Harvey, when all the money gets sucked out of the fact that you can make great interpersonal relationships and be part of that community is a big thing. So the downside, what shies people away, keeps people away from talking about certain things or doing certain things, is often the threat of being cast out of the community or being hated upon or being disliked. So it's tough, but I don't know. Most of the good stories are that way, right? I mean, most of the good meaty stories are kind of. I don't try to rabble rouse, but oftentimes that's where the good story is. So you just kind of dig into it, and at least it's something there. You know, I don't know. I kind of lost my way there. It probably says something about my storytelling ability. Probably. I start out strong, a very strong answer, and then over here.
How about some of that strong answer?
I find having a good support, having a boss who supports me, having an editor-in-chief who says, screw them, publisher, put them be damned. I'm cagey here, oh, I'm not sure this, my people might not like this, it might go over, and they say, well, what have they done for us?
You know, let me ask you something. I mean, you know, but you've become incredibly successful based on the fact that you do run, content that's not sourced,
My content is sourced.
But no, not sourced through the channels that it would want it to be sourced, is what I'm saying.
I'm very happy with
it. No, Rich, you know what I'm saying. Come on now. Now you have more advertisers on the site than in the industry. I mean, how do you handle that? Because sometimes that becomes an issue.
Oh, ask the bosses.
You have to stop.
I ask the bosses. The bosses say, publish it. Publish it. Mm-hmm.
And then you never have an advertiser mad at you?
Yeah.
You work with your bosses?
Usually if it's an editing contentious, absolutely. Yeah, I'll always, because of my bosses, they pay my salary.
Well, why, if they're going to say yes all the time, why would you take it to them at all? Because you don't have a blanket.